This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A Marist College poll finds the most annoying word in a conversation is
whatever. And it's like,
at the end of the day.
So I was like, you guys talk like grown-ups.
I think you did a fantastic job laying that out. Thank you.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
We will have a public option.
Are you quite sure?
Climate Gate emails. It has everything to do with cleaning up the air. Global warming is a hoax.
What's the weather like on your planet?
I've done a lot of radio shows, but you're the best interviewer that I ever had the pleasure to speak with.
I take that as high praise.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Let me thank you for joining us for another hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. We've got, again, about 60 minutes to talk about the things that matter most. Teresa Tomeo joins us in Washington, D.C. You know Teresa as host of Catholic Connection, and she's our correspondent at the March for Life. She's been on the streets there since 9 o'clock this morning, and will give us a great overview of what's happening. Also coming up in this hour of Cresta in the Afternoon, our producer Nick Tom will join us to talk about the movie Extraordinary Measures, which we got a chance to see together, and I haven't met anybody yet who hasn't liked it. And if we get a chance, also pick up on another movie, kind of an offbeat movie called To Save a Life. Also in this hour, I want to wrap up by talking about abortion in America 37 years later, but also put it in the large context of the Samaritan strategy versus the Satanic strategy and how this fight goes on. Christians have been engaged in it since Christ walked the earth and the church was assembled at Pentecost. So that's coming up in this hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. But first, let's hit the headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al, and a very good afternoon to everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. It is Friday, January 22nd. The saint of the day is Saint Vincent. Today's news is brought to you in part by Ascension Press. The pro-life movement is out in force today in the nation's capital for the 37th straight year. Today does mark the anniversary of the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion on demand in the United States. The March for Life pro-life gathering began with a noon rally at the National Mall, then proceeded down Constitution Avenue and ended in front of the Supreme Court. Julie Ahrens, a pro-life supporter, says this is an emotional issue.
I've got a friend, a very close friend of mine, that had an abortion a lot of years ago. And I've seen how it's impacted her life.
And again, as Al mentioned, we will be checking in with Teresa Tomeo, who is at the March for Life, directly following this newscast. Pennsylvania Democratic Senator Arlen Specter told Minnesota Republican Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann to act like a lady yesterday during a radio interview.
Well, prosperity wasn't a bill.
Well, why don't we make it a bill?
Now, wait a minute. Don't interrupt me. I didn't interrupt you. Act like a lady.
Well, I think I
she
am
says,
a lady.
I think she is. Well, I think you are, too. That's why I'm treating you like one. But just don't interrupt me.
The feisty senator's verbal jabs came during a joint interview on a Pittsburgh-area radio station. Right now, Specter, the Republican-turned-Democrat, is trailing Republican Pat Toomey in his reelection bid 49% to 40% in the Pennsylvania Senate fight. The trial of the man accused of gunning down a Kansas abortion doctor has started on the anniversary of the landmark Roe v. Wade ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court legalizing abortion. Scott Roeder is charged with first-degree murder for allegedly shooting Dr. George Tiller at Tiller's Church in Wichita last May. The 51-year-old Roeder has said in media interviews that he killed Tiller to prevent the doctor from performing late-term abortions. He could face a life sentence if convicted. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano wants the international community to diversify its airport security systems. Napolitano is in Europe to meet with an airline association and propose new measures on sharing airline passenger information. She says identical cookie-cutter approaches to security will eventually enable terrorists to find and exploit security lapses. Instead, she says airports should implement an array of technology and screening processes. Her visit was prompted by the failed Christmas Day attempt to blow up a Detroit-bound airliner. And some of the biggest stars from the music world and the acting world will be taking the stage during tonight's Hope for Haiti telethon. The event, which will be hosted by George Clooney, will feature performances in Los Angeles, New York, and London. Artists scheduled to perform in the Big Apple include Wyclef Jean, Jennifer Hudson, and Shakira. Those grabbing the microphone out in Los Angeles include Alicia Keys, Justin Timberlake, John Legend, and Stevie Wonder. Also appearing will be U2, Bruce Springsteen, Beyonce, and Bill Clinton. This telethon will be aired on all of the major networks this evening. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Historians report that the Roman Emperor Caligula, who died in AD 41, was so proud of his horse that he gave him a place as a Senate consul before he died. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and it's my great pleasure to welcome to the broadcast Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection. Teresa has over 20 years of reporting experience in the Detroit radio and TV market. As you know, she is host of Catholic Connection, produced by Ave Maria Radio, and author of Noise, How Our Media-Saturated Culture Dominates Lives and Dismantles Families. And Newsflash, My Surprising Journey from Secular Anchor to Media Evangelist. Teresa's in Washington at the March for Life, and she's been out all day interviewing people, and she managed to get in off the pavement to spend some time with us. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Al. Thank you so much, for allowing me to take time off from the radio program and to come down here each year and cover this. I just love it, and I really appreciate
it's
you.
It's a blessing to all of our listeners to have you there.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, did you see any young women there?
Oh, my goodness. That to me is so encouraging.
This Newsweek, on the Newsweek website, there's a Krista Gezeman who makes the argument that a majority of the participants are in their 60s.
What?
And I'm serious. A majority of the participants are in their 60s, and it raises the question, where are the young, vibrant women?
Please tell me you're just making this up to get my Italian up this afternoon. Not that it takes much to do that, you know me. But Al, I kept saying in my coverage all day long that, you know, as a 50-year-old, I just turned 50 last year, I felt old, and 50 is pretty young nowadays. I can't tell you how many countless young women that I spoke to last night at the mini rally. Today, I mean, it's all young people.
Mm-hmm.
3/4 of the people here are young people.
I was watching on EWTN, and I thought, by the way, I thought you did a wonderful job there.
Thank you.
And I thought Doug did a great job anchoring, too. But I was surprised. It was full of color, enthusiasm, joy, hope,
right,
and youthful exuberance.
And then they say that, you know, it's an older crowd. You know, just the opposite is true. Isn't that interesting how they twist everything and they just approach things from the opposite direction?
In fairness, let me say, she wrote this at 7:15 this morning. So this was before anything had really... I don't know where she was.
That's not even accurate. That's actually just creating a story because the march doesn't start until noon. I mean, don't even get me started, please. I was just going online, back in the hotel, finally thawing out a little bit and looking at some of the different web news websites. And Washington Post had on their homepage does have a cover story on this on the homepage.
Yeah, good.
But they said only tens of thousands, and they said we were chanting and yelling, so they make us sound like lunatics. And you know what? We know what's so sad about that is it's so peaceful. It's so beautiful. I was interviewing some kids. You may have seen a lot of young women, by the way, from St. John Cantons in Chicago.
Yes, I saw that.
Christendom College, and they were singing beautiful Latin hymns and just, you know, chanting beautiful pro-life slogans. They were smiling. They were happy. Everybody is so polite. And they make us sound we're these, like, rabid, crazy people. It's just so frustrating. It's such a great day.
What do you think the numbers were?
Well, actually, I did an interview with Nellie Gray, which was a lot of fun. She was getting in the car to head to the March for Life, so we ran over with our, you know, remote camera. And
good.
She said last year they put out 300,000 in their press release after the march, and she said there's definitely more this year. So she's estimating around 325, 350 is what she told me this afternoon.
And she's been doing this for what, 37 years?
Yeah,
37 years. So.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's a good number. That's still a very
sizable
number.
It keeps going up.
Number,
I mean, I'm probably giving it a low estimate. She thinks, you know, I talked to her for a few minutes, and I was telling Nick in preparation for an interview today that probably even closer to 400,000. I always try to go on the low end just to, you know, to be careful in terms
sure.
of, you know, the factual correctness. But it was huge, absolutely huge. What I noticed this time, and we were standing in the beginning of our coverage, as you may have seen, I was standing behind the stage, and so the speakers were facing out to the crowd. And while the rally was still going on, there were two or three, I think Pastor Luke Robinson was speaking, the people started to form down the street to the for the march to get ready to, you know, march up to the Supreme Court. And that's why Nellie actually had to be driven, because the line was so long, and she had to be driven all the way to the front to get there in time for it to start. So it was just it's just a crazy amount of people, but so uplifting and affirming.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to a sociologist the other day who pointed out that that one very hopeful sign is that 20 and 30 somethings today are more pro-life than their parents were at that same age.
Mm-hmm.
Not by a huge margin, but by a bit. And I thought that makes sense to me from what
I've seen. It does make sense, and I think what's happening, and you and I have seen this, even with people we know that listen to us on Ave Maria, that a lot of these kids are converting their parents to the pro-life movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're getting a better Catholic education than we did when we grew up, and you and I both left the faith for many years, fell away.
Yeah.
And so they're understanding the faith, they're embracing it. And they're also, you know, if they're 20 and in their 30s, then they're survivors of this Holocaust, because it's been 37 years.
I think that is especially poignant when at graduation time, commencement exercises, it often strikes people that roughly one-third of their graduating class isn't there.
Yeah.
You know? Now, so you see the demographic as definitely edging downward, you know, younger. And any politicians show up today?
Oh, quite a few, and it's we have some retired congressmen and congresswomen, but quite a few politicians and state representatives, or I should say U.S. House of Representatives from, you know, various parts of the country. If you actually go to, I'm trying to remember which story I was just reading, but there were several that were mentioned in the Washington Post story. I didn't actually hear them speak because I was doing live interviews while this was going on, but there's a whole slew of different politicians that come in. I tried to reach Bart Stupak. He wasn't in town today because I did exchange voicemails with his press person. I was hoping to get him there, but he was out of town today. And my understanding is Barack Obama, obviously he wasn't going to come or send a message to the March for Life, but he was on his way to Ohio today. So that was you know, an issue. That's why they had the mini rally last night.
Well, I was just going to ask you, how did that – we talked before the rally began, and how was the turnout? And it was a flashlight mini rally.
It was called the flashlight mini rally, and for their first one, I think it was very good. They had a permit for 3,000. They didn't have quite that many. They had several hundred, but it was a mixture of people. Of course, you have to remember the mass was going on at the same time last night at the shrine, so that's probably a reason why the turnout was a little bit lighter. But I think for the first one – it was a very good turnout, and in speaking with Nellie today, she said they're going to do this and as long as Barack Obama is in office, to make sure that he, you know, knows that they're there and they're making a pro-life statement.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing which will gather momentum.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, how's the weather?
Well, it started out really damp and cold, and it was raining, and it was very, very cold. But then the sun came out about the middle of the day, and it was actually really pretty nice. It wasn't as cold as I normally was. Of course, standing out there all day, it does get you after a little while. But when you start walking and when you start talking to all these great people, especially the young people, it was like all of a sudden I realized I'm not cold anymore. As I said to my husband, because Dominic's down here with me, and, you know, he walks. He loves to come to the march and get involved in it. And I looked at him, and I said, are you cold? He said, no, I'm not cold at all. It was kind of, we had this sudden, you know, revelation that we were just so enthralled and involved in the activities that we didn't even feel the cold after a while.
How did you, Catholics and evangelicals together down there?
Oh, that's the other thing that's so great. It's such a... and effort and you know, ecumenism. I actually interviewed an Anglican priest, and there are many Baptists, different churches, Methodist, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, as I've said, the Anglican church there. It's just a phenomenal group. And there was a wonderful rabbi who spoke at the rally today, and there were Jews for Life and all kinds of different groups represented. So it's very, very encouraging.
That's great. That is great.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It's just a great event to cover because you're there, and, you know, we feel like we're so isolated and alone. If you would just watch the culture, if you read, for example, as you pointed out, that Newsweek article, or if you go on, you know, another secular news website, you see, the way they paint it versus the way it actually happened and the truth, you feel like you're isolated and you're alone, but when you go there, and it's just never-ending sign of people from all over the world and the country, and most of them are young. It's just so encouraging.
Mm. Well, it sounds like it came off very well. Now, do you do anything tonight, or is the event officially over?
There is a rose dinner tonight, and okay. I believe a philosopher and professor, I'm sure you know him, I know you've interviewed him a million times, Robert George is going to be the keynote speaker tonight.
Yeah.
And there'll be some pro-life conferences and events, but our EWTN coverage is concluded in terms of the actual march. They will be replaying it, I believe there'll be a rebroadcast this evening at 10 o'clock, and they'll be playing it again on Sunday. And then tomorrow, the coverage will switch with EWTN for the Walk for Life in San Francisco. So all the production of the production guys that I worked with today now are getting on a plane and going out to San Francisco and turning around the March for Life West Coast tomorrow.
Yeah. I think Raymond has a special hour and a half.
Yes, that's right. He has an hour and a half tonight, and he has several people on that we interviewed. I believe that also Peggy Hawthorne from Heartbeat International, Jill Stanek is going to be on, and a number of other folks. So.
Very good. Yeah. Well, Teresa, thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you when you return.
Yes, and thanks again, boss, for giving me the 2 days off to come down here and do the march.
We love it. So thanks, Teresa.
All right. God bless.
Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection there in Washington, D.C., our correspondent at the March for Life, and also street correspondent for EWTN. If you were watching EWTN earlier today, you saw she did a great job. So, more coming up. We take a look at a new, very fine movie.
Catholic Scripture Study, CSS, is perfect for any group or parish that is looking for an inspiring Bible study that is faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. These lessons are very Catholic. They include a connection to the Catechism, as well as saint quotes or papal quotes. In addition, you can find online resources on the CSS website, and we have dedicated volunteers to help you throughout the course by phone or email. You don't have to be a Bible scholar to lead one of our classes. More details available at cssprogram.net.
Great schools are places where ideas come alive and get everyone involved. This is what Ave Maria University offers. Come and experience the fruits of a true liberal arts education at Ave Maria University. Unlike schools who take the faith for granted, the faith is the lifeblood of who we are. Ave Maria University, preparing students for success in this world and for never-ending joy in the next. Call 877-AVEU-NIV or click www.avemaria.edu.
What makes the miracles of Jesus even more miraculous? Standing where they happened, in Israel. Come to the hills of Galilee where Jesus fed the multitude. Follow the way of the cross along the Via Dolorosa. Stroll through Capernaum where Jesus lived and taught and healed. To learn more about standing where it all happened, in Israel, the Holy Land, visit GoIsrael.com. Come visit Israel. You'll never be the same.
The Archdiocese of Detroit is presenting a concert of music to benefit the relief effort in Haiti this Sunday, January 24th at 2 p.m. It will be at the chapel at St. John's in Plymouth, 5 Mile and Sheldon Road. A soprano and baritone, as well as strings, piano, and organ will be on the program. This is a free will offering concert. Cash donations or checks made to Catholic Relief Services Haiti will be appreciated. All are welcome. Call 248-553-0999.
I'm Al Cresta, joined right now by the producer of Cresta in the Afternoon, Nick Tom. Nick, we went out to see this movie, to a screening of the movie Extraordinary Measures, and starring Harrison Ford, and I was surprised. It was I thought it was a very moving story, and is it the kind of movie that you think is going to get a lot of attention?
I do. It's gotten a lot of advertising, and I think star power alone is going to demand that it gets written about and talked about.
Yeah.
It opens today, so we'll see. But interestingly enough, I just checked Rotten Tomatoes about 20 minutes ago or so, and I had a feeling this was going to be the case, and it proved to be true. This is the kind of movie that all of the critics hate, and not a single normal person that you talk to is not going to like. I compare it to the movie Radio. Even fellow Christian critics didn't like the movie Radio, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. And I have yet to encounter a person in my personal relationships that saw the movie and didn't love it. Right now on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics on a scale of 1 to 100 are at 19. With all the critics that have written in, and the public opinion is at 56. So it just shows you the disparity.
Well, lay it out for us, the plot.
Yeah, it's a true story. It's it's based on a true story. The story of the family of John and Eileen Crowley. They have two children who have a rare genetic disorder called Pompe disease, and basically it's a muscular degenerative disorder. You're not expected to live past 9 at the outside. Crowley is a very successful businessman with Bristol-Myers Squibb, and they have a scare with their oldest daughter, Megan, who is 8 years old, so, you know, nearing the time where she should pass away. And in that moment, he prayed that if she was supposed to go, that she would go quickly and without pain. But if that she was supposed to live, then God would, you know, give him a direction. And she lived, and the direction that he took was to quit his job and give up his salary and the medical insurance that the family needed to try and save his daughter's life. So he went into business with Harrison Ford's character, Dr. Robert Stonehill, who had been doing research on the enzymes that would be necessary to have a treatment for Pompe disease. So they have
he's a
bit of a contentious
a
relationship.
Yeah. He's a strange bird.
Yeah. In real life and in the film. So, you know, they form this this company, and they end up having to sell the company to a larger pharmaceutical company so that they can get on track faster. And, you know, the rest you'll have to go to the theater to find out what happens. Interesting facts, Dr. Robert Stonehill doesn't exist. He was an amalgam character. He was a composite of multiple scientists. There was one scientist in particular that was, you know, kind of ahead of the field, and he was a main resource for Crowley. But they made the character of Dr. Stonehill a composite character who represented a lot of different scientists and researchers who aided Crowley in bringing this drug to market.
Yeah. I thought the trailer wasn't very good.
It wasn't. I don't like the advertising. I don't like the trailers. It makes it seem much too made for TV, Lifetime, you know, women's entertainment kind of really light, sappy fare. And it's not a sappy movie. I mean, it's inspirational.
It's
emotional.
It's
it's about a father who says, "I'm not going to let my child die."
Right.
And that's one of the things I love about it is that so many portrayals, especially on television, but also in film now, fathers are either the Homer Simpson type of you know, boob who has no common sense, you know, idiot father, doesn't know any better, or is abusive or you know, sexually promiscuous. Is a father who would rather die than see his children suffer, and is willing to give up everything to even have a chance at his children living.
Yeah, and he's also a product of the corporate world.
That's right.
Which is often portrayed as, you know, greedy, you know, Wall Street, Gordon Gekko type people. This has this has actually a very subtle portrayal of the kind of pressures upon large pharmaceutical firms.
That was my first takeaway from the film, the second I walked out of the theater was how it would have been very easy in a film like this to just create angels and demons.
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Stonehill and the family and the kids, you know, heroes, all they're trying to do is the right thing. And then, you know, big pharmaceutical, big business is all evil. All they care about is the bottom line. They don't care about people. Yeah. All they want to do is make their money on the drugs. Yeah. And it's not like that. It's not that like that in real life, and it wasn't portrayed that way in the film.
Right.
And it was a better film because of it.
I agree. And it would have been too easy to fall, again, into those obvious stereotypes. They avoid doing that. Harrison Ford puts in a very good performance.
Yeah.
And
this was
Brendan
Harrison
Fraser
Ford's baby. Harrison Ford was a co-executive producer on this film. He signed on to do this because he wanted something new, something different.
Yeah.
He wanted to play a different kind of character. And when he read the script, he wanted in more than just an acting sense in this. In fact, I think he helped cast the rest of the cast. He was, as a producer, putting on his producer hat, he helped hire the director, he helped hire Brendan Fraser, he helped hire the kids. In fact, the oldest daughter, Megan, they saw 600 girls before casting her. And they said she came through a YouTube audition, and they saw the YouTube video. They brought her out to L.A. and interviewed her, and they said the moment she walked in the room, they knew that this was the girl.
Wow. That's got to be exhausting.
I would be horrible at it. I would be absolutely awful.
I mean, after the first 10, you know, it's like, this one's good enough.
Yeah, you know. 600 people they saw before hiring her.
Wow. This is, was this released last week or is it being released today?
Today.
It is released today.
Yep, today is opening day.
So Book of Eli was the one that was released last week, and I got a chance to see that with my son. I didn't tell you that. Did I tell you I want to see it?
You mentioned it, but we never got a chance to talk about it further.
Yeah, I enjoyed Book of Eli. I'm with Nick Tom, and we're taking a look at some recent movies that we've both seen, although you've got one I haven't seen.
Yeah, this only came to my attention maybe a week ago, and I was able to secure a screener for it right away. This opens tomorrow as well. It's a film called To Save a Life, and unlike Extraordinary Measures and Book of Eli, which advertising was everywhere, this one I'm sure you have not heard of. It's produced by a church group, much like Facing the Giants and Fireproof. It's a low-budget film produced by an evangelical church. This one is not produced by the same church that produced
Fireproof,
Facing the Giants and Fireproof.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different church in Southern California. It had a budget of under $1 million, and it's in limited release, but I typed in a few zip codes to look where it's at. In Ann Arbor, it's playing at the Showcase today. Mm-hmm. There's only three or four around the Detroit metro area. I checked, you know, where my parents live in Illinois. It's playing at the Cineplex in the Quad Cities, you know, one or two theaters in Denver. So it's out there, and it's going to be possible, if people watch it, that it would be expanded. The basic gist of the film is that there's the popular kid in high school, the star of the basketball team, who is dating the gorgeous cheerleader, has no religious faith whatsoever. You know, Christianity is for other people. He has a childhood friend that he grew up with who actually saved his life in childhood, pushed him out of the way of a car, and he was hit himself and had a banged up leg because of it. When this kid, Jake, enters high school and, you know, becomes popular, it's kind of over-dramatized at the beginning that he's invited to a party, and everyone at the party, the people who invite him, say, well, you can't bring that kid. He's not cool.
Mm.
He basically ends up distancing himself from his former friend, and this former friend ends up committing suicide. So that's the first 15 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Then it takes him through high school. He has an intervention from a seems like a evangelical megachurch kind of youth pastor who becomes involved, and Jake's parents are going through a divorce, and all they care about is him going to college and playing basketball at Louisville. You know, they frown on the fact that he's going to church. They think it's taking away from his studies because he needs to, you know, keep up his grades to get into Louisville and play basketball. Mm-hmm. So his parents go through a divorce. He gets his girlfriend pregnant, and then there's the whole abortion issue. But it's preachy at times.
Yeah.
It's $1 million budget.
Doing.
That being said, I had extremely low expectations going into it, and they were just shattered. The production quality on this far surpasses, I think, anything I've seen with $1 million budget. The acting is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
It's a very positive. It's a movie that was directly made for teens to see,
it's an outreach film.
Yeah, make them aware of the actions that they take while in high school have dramatic implications on the rest of their lives and on others.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a great movie for youth directors, youth pastors to take their kids to. It's rated PG-13 for some of the scenes of violence with the suicide, and there's drug use, there's alcohol mm-hmm. use, light language.
Any theological problems for Catholics?
No. Okay. I mean, it's good. Very much an evangelical film.
Basic gospel.
Yeah, gospel.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Book of Eli. I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Since, last time we talked about it, we hadn't. I hadn't seen it. You had seen it. I went to it with my son, 17-year-old son,
mm-hmm.
Evan, and we were both pleasantly surprised. It's, as you pointed out, it's an apocalyptic-type film. I mean, the world has been destroyed, and those who are left are involved in banditry and all manner of immoral behavior, vicious behavior, survival. Survival
mm-hmm.
behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there is Denzel Washington plays this prophetic character
yep.
who's has this task of delivering the one remaining copy of Scripture. And it's full of surprises.
Yes.
That's what I didn't realize when I had gone in there that I should be watching carefully. What was going on?
Yeah, because, there were a few things I missed.
And
reading back through the production notes and talking to other Christian journalists out at the junket, that there's a scene where, and I missed this in my first viewing of the film, that there's a branch in the road at one point where he has a brief decision to make, which way does he go? And one of the paths is very wide and one is very narrow. And he chooses the narrow path, which ends up taking him to where he's supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fascinating book. It's a fascinating movie. Again, as you did point this out, that this is not a general family film because it's a lot of action, a lot of adventure, a lot of... sliced limbs and violence. Although there's not a lot of blood.
Right. It's not gory. It's not bloody, but it is violent.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of language. But even the language and the violence I took away as a teaching point, especially if you take an older teenage son to the film. I mean, I don't think teen girls are going to get excited about this. Isn't a mom and daughter date.
this is a
father and son timed. There's so much to discuss after the film. That's why I like it for that purpose. But even with the violence and language, there's a teaching lesson. If you notice, Eli does not use any curse words throughout the film.
Right.
It's the bandits and everyone else that use coarse language. And so that's an example. You know, he's a man set apart.
Even
in this, violent kill or be killed post-apocalyptic world in which there is no government to rein in anyone, even it sets him apart as a man chosen by God to do
mm-hmm.
this task.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's outstanding. So we've had a surprising at this point in the last few weeks, surprising number of good releases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I haven't seen more than these three.
Yeah.
So far, I'm very impressed with 2010.
How's Book of AI doing?
It was number one.
Okay.
And it's getting both critical and popular praise.
Yeah, good. Okay, that stars Denzel Washington, Book of Eli.
And Gary Oldman.
And Gary Oldman, who was really did a fine job. Extraordinary Measures, starring Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
And
we should mention Carrie Russell, too. She plays Mrs. John Crowley. She plays Brendan Fraser's wife. And she was quite good.
She was good. She was good. Yeah.
I wish they would have developed her character a little bit further.
It was a little thin, right?
Yeah, but it's due to time restraints. But one of the things I thought was strange about it was you didn't have a single scene of extended family or church community or neighbors who helped out. I mean, here you have this family that has two kids in wheelchairs that are on ventilators. And, you know, a third child who does not have Pompe disease.
Yeah.
But yet, in all of this difficulty, when he's traveling and, you know, they're struggling, not a single neighbor stops by to drop off an apple pie.
I don't think there's no minister, no priest.
No.
No church, no service. Yeah.
The mother-in-law doesn't come for a week to, you know.
That's a little weird.
I guess if you introduce new characters, you have to develop them. But the other thing I should mention about To Save a Life, it was far too long.
Oh.
It was 2 hours long. And a film like this needs to be 90 minutes max.
Okay.
So it did drag on, but it's still worth taking your teens to.
All right. So Book of Eli, Extraordinary Measures to Save a Life, all worth looking into.
Absolutely.
Okay. Nick, thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Nick Tom, executive producer of Crest in the Afternoon, often does film reviews for us as well. And these, again, three movies that are worth your time, although they vary in terms of intended audience. Book of Eli, a good father-son film to go to, but your son should be well into his teens. Extraordinary Measures, a family film. Although very young children might find it a little distressing because of illness. And Save Life, which is produced largely for the purpose of youth outreach, but does a good job of it. On the other side of the break, I want to come back, talk about on this day of the March for Life and the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, I want to talk a little bit about the Samaritan versus the Satanic strategy. And the fight that Christians have been engaged in to proclaim the gospel of life from the time of the incarnation right up to this afternoon.
Start your day a better way with the Sunrise Morning Show on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio. Hi, I'm Brian Patrick. We'll help you get going each morning with prayer, the daily readings and reflections, church history, the lives of the saints, timely interviews, the nation's weather, and the day's news from a Catholic perspective. Start each day with the Sunrise Morning Show, weekday mornings on Ave Maria Radio.
The Sunrise Morning Show.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. As a Catholic business owner, Catholic people like to do business with Catholic businesses. And the online CatholicBusinessPages.com lets Catholic consumers know you're out there. When you display your business on CatholicBusinessPages.com, you'll get an entire year of advertising at less than a dollar a day. That's 12 full months of online advertising, effective, affordable, and targeted to your market. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Catholic Business Pages link and enter promo code AMR and save.
On October 13th, this station presented the 13th day at Our Lady of Good Counsel. At least 1,000 people showed up, in part because some really great volunteers took time to tell a friend. Susie from Waterford told her pastor, and he told his flock, and then she posted it on her blog, and well, the rest is history. Susie is a tell-a-friend volunteer. You can be one, too. To join the team, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click Tell a Friend. Susie did it. You can, too. That's AveMariaRadio.net and click Tell a Friend.
2 years ago, my husband and I made a great decision for our family. We chose Spiritus Sanctus Academy as our partner in education. It's a warm, joyfully Catholic K-8 school led by the Dominican Sisters of Mary. Our children receive a superb education, and we're thrilled to see how they've grown in their love for God and the faith. Come to an open house at the Plymouth School February 3rd or the Ann Arbor School February 7th and see what a great Catholic education can do for your family. For more details, visit SpiritusSanctus.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining me. One of the ways I've gotten a grip myself on what's most important in the flow of human history is to make a distinction between what I call the Samaritan strategy and the Satanic strategy. It's this relationship between God and human beings and how they treat one another that I think is the engine of history. I think every major question in history is at bottom a spiritual question. The God question has more effect in molding history than nationalism or a common language or economic and political systems. In spite of what you read in New York Times editorials or in Vanity Fair or hear about on MSNBC, the deepest currents of history are spiritual and cultural, not economic and political. History is not just the product of the contest for power in the world. It's not just the exhaust fumes of the means of production. History is driven over the long haul by culture, by what men and women honor, cherish, worship, by what societies deem are good, true, beautiful. So I read history as a series of decisive choices that human beings make in how they will esteem one another and how they will treasure the gift of life that's been entrusted to them. Now, let me go over the Satanic strategy to begin with. Satan's strategy in all of this is to so cheapen and trivialize human life that the image of God, that is, the human person, to so cheapen and trivialize that human person that the existence of God is itself questioned and made less plausible, less credible. Ruin the image and call into question the existence of the proto-image, the prototype. And you see this all the time. I remember years ago talking with a woman who's a 3-year-old son, had died of liver cancer. She was in the midst of a tremendous crisis of faith because she had seen the object of her love trashed. She had seen the image of God defaced. This is the Satanic strategy, to kill God in effigy and hope that we forget God's reality. Elie Wiesel, in his autobiographical novel, I guess you would call it, Night, tells a profound story about execution in a German concentration camp. Again, a book worth looking at, but it very much portrays the Satanic strategy. To kill God in effigy, and to do so, when we do that, we begin to make less plausible God's reality. You know, remember the Zapruder film, in which we see the head of JFK blown apart. Nobody says, wow, I feel God's presence when they see that. No, it calls into question the dignity and value of the human person. You take a look at, Steven Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan, that D-Day scene, landing on the beach, human life trivialized. Or take a look at the flaming terror of September 11th. Or the suffocating waters of Hurricane Katrina. We've got an earthquake in Haiti right now, and the grinding of the poor into the earth, quite literally. The apparent cheapness of human life, the trivializing, again, of human life, makes it easy to discredit the very idea and plausibility of God. Disproportionate suffering of human persons renders God's existence implausible. Treat people badly, and God becomes increasingly unreal. Destroy the image, and distance yourself from the reality. And abortion, infanticide, exposure, abandonment have always been a normal and natural part of the Satanic strategy. Thomas Hobbes had a description of life which sounds a little bit like a law firm: solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. He described that as a natural state of mankind. And it's worth thinking that for every Mother Teresa, there are millions of impoverished Hindus. We think of Immaculée Ilibagiza in Rwanda. 50,000. For every Immaculée, there are 50,000 dead Tutsis. There is a way, though, of countering the satanic strategy. You can't deny it. It's there. The way of countering, though, isn't pretending that it isn't powerful. It is powerful. The way of contending with it is to recognize that you are in the midst of an ongoing struggle to affirm human dignity, and in so doing, making more plausible the existence of a benevolent, loving, and creator God. Virtually every culture, let me take you back a bit on this. You know, we had March for Life today, and there's a pro-life placard that proclaims the natural choice is life. Well, I know what that means. There is kind of a natural desire that mothers have to bring forth their children. But in some way, the natural choice isn't life, if you look at cultures. The natural choice is often death. Virtually every culture in antiquity was stained with the blood of innocent children. Unwanted infants in ancient Rome were abandoned outside the city walls to die from exposure. The Greeks often gave their pregnant women harsh doses of medicinal herbal abortifacients. The Persians, a highly cultured society, developed highly sophisticated surgical curette procedures for abortion. Chinese women figured out a way to abort by tying heavy ropes around their waist. These were drawn so excruciatingly tight that they either aborted or passed into unconsciousness. Ancient Hindus and Arabs concocted chemical pessaries that were pushed or pumped directly into the womb through the birth canal. Primitive Canaanites, we get to pick this up in Scripture, threw their children into great flaming furnaces as a sacrifice to the god Moloch. You go down. Polynesians had their way. Japanese women had their way of straddling boiling cauldrons with parasitical herbs. And the Egyptians were no better. This wasn't the result of lower-class barbarians. Just like we've got brilliant supporters of abortion and infanticide today, Princeton's Peter Singer, James Watson and Francis Crick, who discovered the DNA double helix, we've got famed supporters of abortion today. We consider ourselves an advanced culture and society. So, too, in the ancient world, there were great minds who were supporters of abortion and infanticide. Plato and Aristotle, Seneca, Quintilian, Pythagoras, Aristophanes, Livy, Cicero, Herodotus, and Thucydides, Plutarch, and Euripides. None of them disparaged child killing in any way. Most of them actually recommended it, and they discussed its methods, they illustrated its procedures, and they casually debated its legal ramifications. So the Christian response isn't to say the world is so bad we must flee suffering like the hedonists. And the Christian response isn't to say we just have to kind of grin and bear it and endure it like the Stoics. Nor is the Christian response to have some sort of metaphysical escape from it like Buddhists. No, we're people who live embodied within the crucified Christ. We are people of hope. And so we learn the Samaritan strategy, Jesus' offensive strategy to drive human history and to elevate the human person so that God's image is more vividly reflected in the world around us. So what is the Samaritan strategy? Well, it's an answer to a question that Jesus was asked. He was asked, "Who's my neighbor?" The questions asked of Jesus by an expert in the Mosaic Law. He approaches Jesus with the question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? He happened to be a legal expert, and Jesus decided to take him on his own terms. So he asked him a legal question. Okay, you tell me, what's written in the law? How do you read it? And the fellow answered predictably and correctly. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, you answered correctly. Do this, and you'll have eternal life. End of discussion. But the lawyer wasn't satisfied with the ruling. So in effect, he said, well, Jesus, that's all well and good, but the real question before us is, who is my neighbor? We have to get specific. We can't just live with generalities. We have to be concrete and definitive about who's my neighbor. Who's the person for whom I will bear responsibility? Who are the privileged group? What groups can we safely ignore? Tell me, Jesus, all I really want is a straight, concrete answer. Who's my neighbor? But Jesus wasn't to be outdone. He's thought this through. He says, okay, if this is about words, I'll do you one better. I'll give you a picture. I'll tell you a parable. So a picture's worth 1,000 words. And then Jesus goes on and he gives us the immortal parable of the Good Samaritan. He paints the picture of a man, a Samaritan man, from the wrong side of town, but on the right side of compassion. He tells us that a man was traveling down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He was ambushed by robbers who beat him, stripped him, left him for dead. And an ordained priest saw the man pass by on the other side of the street. And then an unordained lay minister, a Levite, also passed by on the other side of the street. And next came a half-breed, spiritually mongrel Samaritan, who was despised by the Orthodox Jews. Well, the Samaritan seemed to intuitively know who his neighbor was. He, unlike Aristotle, unlike Seneca, he was moved by compassion. He bandaged the guy's wounds, poured on oil and wine, put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, gave him care. And the next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, look after him, and I'll pick up the food and the medical bills when I return. And, of course, then Jesus asked, which of the three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? That's the Samaritan strategy, this kind of proactive willingness to broaden our definition of which human lives are worth protecting and serving, and then a willingness to commit ourselves in voice and action to protect and serve those lives. This will bring us into conflict with our society, perhaps with our government, which has permitted in abortion the defacing of the image of God. But it's also going to bring us into conflict even with our fellow Christians and Catholics. The Samaritan strategy is what drove the followers of Jesus to teach and baptize and build a community accepting of all peoples, including slaves and women and the abandoned. Rodney Stark, who you've heard on this program a few times, he's one of the most eminent sociologists in America, has a remarkable book called The Rise of Christianity, where he points out why Christianity succeeded. It's because the Christians cared for the sick during plagues. They didn't abandon people. That lowered mortality. Christians didn't adopt the macho ethos of the pagans. They emphasized male fidelity within marriage that attracted a higher percentage of female converts, who in turn raised more Christian children. I have a few more words for you on the other side of the break.
Now on DVD, unlock the mystery of the world's most famous star.
As I came across an article by a PhD astronomer that took the position the star was a real astronomical event. Whether they believe in God or not, they're going to show you this shot.
Compelling scientific theory that the Star of Bethlehem existed from a cynic's point of view.
That's what John saw. Can a star stop? How can a star stop?
From the Passion of the Christ producer Stephen McAveety, the Star of Bethlehem.
Because if we found the star and a reasonable person could conclude that we have, well, then the star was part of the natural order.
BethlehemStar.net to see with your own eyes as the Magi did.
Catholic Scripture Study, CSS, is perfect for any group or parish that is looking for an inspiring Bible study that is faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church.
These lessons are very Catholic. They include a connection to the Catechism, as well as saint quotes or papal quotes. In addition, you can find online resources on the CSS website, and we have dedicated volunteers to help you throughout the course by phone or email. You don't have to be a Bible scholar to lead one of our classes. More details available at cssprogram.net.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Over 50 million unborn babies have been aborted since the Supreme Court declared abortion legal. As we anticipate the next March for Life in Washington, Father Ricardo talks about the inviolable dignity of the human person on Christ is the Answer this week. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the answer.
Christ is the answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Just in closing, back in the day of Basil of Caesarea in the 4th century, there was a group who profited by harvesting the children who had been killed in abortion. Basil said to the Emperor Valentinian, you got to take some steps here. And for the first time in human history, law was passed that parents must support their children conceived. Those who brutalize or abandon them will be subject to the full penalty prescribed by law. Basil died 4 years after that at the age of 50. He had made his mark not only on the church, but through the church he had altered human history, and the Samaritan strategy had pushed back the satanic strategy. Be with Raymond Arroyo tonight for an hour and a half panel on the pro-life movement, and I'll see you next week here on Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineers are Kara Coulter and Anne-Marie Parisot. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Great schools are places where ideas come alive and get everyone involved. This is what Ave Maria University offers. Come and experience the fruits of a true liberal arts education at Ave Maria University. Unlike schools who take the faith for granted, the faith is the lifeblood of who we are. Ave Maria University, preparing students for success in this world and for never-ending joy in the next. Call 877-AVEU-NIV or click www.avemaria.edu. During this recession, many investors are afraid to invest in stocks or bonds. It may actually be a good time to invest, since prices are now low. At Ave Maria Mutual Funds, we believe our professional investment experts have positioned the portfolios to take advantage of the economic and market recovery we expect over the next few years. Now may be an opportune time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more about the pro-life and pro-family Ave Maria Mutual Funds, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA to receive a free investor kit or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. distributed by Ultimus Fund.